Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Friday. This is First Things First. Jenna Wolf, Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. And we've got a ton of stuff to talk about today.
I don't quite feel like a Hall of Famer today.
Why not?
Man, I was up late.
Oh, that man, welcome in NFL season. This is three days a week.
Welcome to show business.
Not welcome to show business. NFL business. Monday show, yeah. Friday shows, all these shows.
Yeah, this is my 18th season I'm covering. Yeah, thanks for welcoming me.
No problem. But
thanks
welcome
to
in.
Antonio Brown, we're going to spice things up because the drama surrounding him is at an all-time high. Wait till you hear the latest stunt he pulled. NBA star Chris Bosh is going to be joining us live in studio.
Excited for that.
Yep. But we will start with the reason Chris Carter does not feel like a Hall of Famer this morning.
No.
Start of the 2019 NFL season. Packers taking on the Chicago Bears. All eyes on Aaron Rodgers in that new Matt LaFleur offense. Green Bay down three. Here we go. Rodgers to Jimmy Graham. Jimmy going up and grabbing what's his for the touchdown. Packers took a 7-3 halftime lead. Not a whole lot of offense in this one. Fourth quarter, Bears driving down seven. Mitchell Trubisky looking for Allen Robinson, but he's picked off. Rough night for Trubisky, 26 of 45, five sacks. Bears would get the ball one more time, couldn't pick up the first down. Matt LaFleur gets his first win as a head coach, and Aaron Rodgers showed some love to Packers defensive coordinator Mike Pettine after the game.
Yeah, that was fun to watch. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen a performance like that. Obviously, a lot of credit to Mike Pettine and his staff. But to those players, I mean, just incredible effort. We didn't do them a whole lot of favors with our own performance on offense. But, I mean, every time we needed something, a stop, they came up with some really big plays.
Obviously, unacceptable. Starts with me. So this just told the guys in there, this is not who we are. I was proud of our defense. I thought they played their ass off tonight. Offensively, not good enough, and we're going to fix it. Our guys know that. We have a locker room of high character people. That's why we bring these guys in, because what they do is they don't point fingers. The defense doesn't point fingers and say the offense should have played better. That's not how we roll.
So there was some debate in the morning meeting over whether last night was a great game because defensively it was stellar, or not such a great game because there really was not much offense to talk about. See, what did you take away from last night?
Yeah, I would say a great game. It's hard to play offensive football earlier in the season. I've been telling you guys the last couple weeks, when you start the season, defenses are ahead of the offenses, and now we're in this era where these players, because of the collective bargaining agreement, they're going to be practicing less, playing in the preseason less, and you could see it. You could see that the defense was one or two steps ahead of the offense. It suffered in the running game. Neither team could have any type of running game. And that's what we'll typically see for the first couple weeks of the season. But the defense in Green Bay, I guarantee you the Packers fans, they weren't disappointed. No. They thought it was a masterpiece. I don't remember ever seeing Aaron Rodgers have that type of defensive support. And if they're going to play football that way, the Packers are going to have a chance to win a lot of games. We've been saying this for years. If they can run the ball, they can play some defense. And they got that with Mike Pettine. The money that they spent this offseason, the draft capital that they spent on that, on their safeties and on their corners, is paying dividends. And we could see it last night. So not the Packers didn't have to rely on a huge comeback by Aaron Rodgers, a Hail Mary late in the game, trying to win 42-38. No. This is a classic NFC North battle, and the Packers showed the defense that we hadn't seen for a long time. So for me, I thought it was a masterpiece by Mike Pettine and that defensive staff.
I had two major takeaways from last night's game. On the Packers side of things, my takeaway is exactly what Aaron Rodgers was when he talked on the field after the game.
when he said, we've got a defense. And then they asked him another question, and he just repeated the same thing. We've got a defense. The Packers' investments on defense, as you mentioned, first-round pick Kenny Clark from a few years ago, first-round pick Jaire Alexander, first-round pick Savage, the safety. All those guys showed up in large part. Their two big offseason acquisitions, the two Smiths, Preston and Zadarius, they combined for 2.5 sacks on the game. Those five players, first-round picks, big-money acquisitions in the offseason, all showed up, and they bailed out a Packers offense that was more than rusty, a Packers offense that was bad. Aaron Rodgers, the plan was for him to play a little in the preseason, but before one preseason game, his back tightened up.
Yep.
Another preseason game, they have the bad field in Canada, so all of a sudden, they seemed like they were late getting plays in, or they were going, the play clock was winding down a lot on them. They had a delay game, they used some timeouts. They just looked rusty in that regard. And on the other side of the ball, it's only 1 week, but the Bears' quarterback problem appears to be real and appears to be concerning. There, on that final drive of the game, there were two plays that were significant, the final real drive for the Bears. And it would concern me if I were a Bears fan which one surprised me. There was a 3rd and 10 that Mitch Trubisky delivered a good pass. The Packers dropped 8 in coverage. He found the weak spot in the zone, gets a first down. That play surprised me. The interception he threw in the end zone did not surprise me. I think a lot of people saw watching that drive waiting for the mistake to happen because Trubisky was flirting with disaster all game long with a few dropped picks. So for the Bears, the defense looked dominant once again, but the offense could get nothing going on the ground or in the air.
To me, the Bears don't have a quarterback problem. The Bears have a situation like all the great defensive teams that have won Super Bowls. There's going to be some Sundays you're not going to be happy with it. If you go back over the last 20 years, the teams like Baltimore, we saw Seattle, we even saw Denver with the injured Peyton Manning hanging on. If you're going to play dominant defense, you can still win a championship, but there are going to be 5 or 6 Sundays out of that 16-game schedule. You're going to be like, man, this offense, do we have enough productivity? I'm not worried about the quarterback. I'm more worried about the wide receivers. Because it wasn't like they had a whole bunch of guys wide open.
It's just,
they don't have a whole bunch of game changers. So before we start pointing at Trubisky and everything, and when you get in third and long situations, where was he supposed to throw the ball? He had to make a play. He had to force that ball. That wasn't like a mistake by the quarterback. That's what happens when you're down by a touchdown. They couldn't settle for a field goal. You hadn't make any big plays. And you can't depend on these young receivers. So for me, Anthony Morgan, when is he going to step up? And they missed the Trey Burton, the tight end. They needed a tight end to be able to affect the middle of the field. So for me, before we start pointing at the quarterback, the coach mentioned it too. If he's supposed to be some offensive genius, he's got to be able to come up with some plays.
It's on him.
Tyreek Cohen, he's got to play a bigger role. So let's share in some of this responsibility. He doesn't have the best group of skilled guys. So this is a defensive-oriented team. Let's not forget that. That's where all their resources are. But you're going to have some Sundays. You're like, ugh. I remember talking to Ray Lewis. He was like, man, can you guys win a Super Bowl? Yeah, we'll hold them to 3 points.
I guess the only pushback I would give on that is that Ravens team, the Bucs team, you mentioned the Broncos team, pardon me, with Peyton when he was clearly not himself. Those teams didn't go into the season believing, maybe the Broncos team did, we could have a great player at quarterback. They knew they were going to have to work around the quarterback. The Bears, listening to them this offseason, listening to Nagy, listening to the people covering the team in Chicago, had really high expectations for Mitch Trubisky. Now, 1 week, you shouldn't overreact to it, even though everyone's going to overreact to every game this weekend. The Bears don't want Mitch Trubisky to have to be Trent Dilfer. They want Mitch Trubisky to be a franchise quarterback on a team that has
I think
a
he has more
defense.
Talent than those other guys.
Right.
Besides Russell Wilson,
agreed.
On the defensive-oriented teams, he's got more arm talent than Flacco, more talent than the person that you mentioned. So the Bears, let's not forget how they're trying to win. They're not trying to win by dropping the quarterback back 40 times. So, like Coach Mangini said yesterday, why is everybody complaining the guy's slow? They don't have a whole bunch of weapons.
Well, that's the other. they called 52 pass plays to 13 run plays. That's a problem for them because that is not a recipe for Chicago to succeed in a game that was a one-score game the entire time.
And then, of course, the other thing, and then we will get to this, is if we saw enough last night to be able to comment on this new-look offense from Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, we will discuss that much more on Mitch Trubisky and the rest of this opening night in the NFL. But coming up, The other big story in the NFL, will the Raiders release Antonio Brown after what happened yesterday? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. We'll get to the Antonio Brown saga in just a second. But first, the NFL is back. A couple of big plays from last night. Aaron Rodgers hitting Jimmy Graham for last night's only touchdown. You like the play?
When he threw this, C, did you think it was going to be a good result?
Well, Aaron Rodgers never throws the ball in the traffic. So he was basically getting Jimmy Graham to post up. They're trying to get Jimmy Graham more involved, especially in the red zone.
All right, a little high school football. This is in El Paso, Texas. Andres High running back Trayvon Ware running like a man possessed. All the way into the end zone.
Okay, thickness.
Is he going to score?
Oh, yeah.
Go.
He's tired now.
Man.
The coach is like, lift your legs. He's like, I'm lifting, coach. I'm lifting.
They're up. Man. Up.
Oh, that reminds me of the DeMarcus, who was it? Terrell Suggs highlight.
Yes.
That we saw from high school.
Little thickness. Dude, right. Like 5'6".
Little D2 college football. Washburn's Colin Wilson. Sandwiched between two defenders, still makes a nice catch.
Oh, this is impressive. Anytime the wide receiver catches the ball with one hand and two defenders are close, the potential getting hit, you got to give it up for that.
Wow.
Great stab right there.
I mean, the quarterback set him up to get annihilated there.
Everyone always says the quarterbacks are smart. No, they're not.
All right, here we go. Amusement park. Check out this guy. He makes the clutch one-handed grab
to save
another guy's cell phone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's money
right there.
Now, if I ride the roller coaster, I can't even have my eyes open. All I'm doing is calling on my Lord.
Lord.
It's not only saved the guy's phone, but the people behind him could have got smacked in the face with the phone.
Easily.
Could have been a lawsuit.
That was Hall of Fame hands work.
Wow.
Well, we got
a lot better highlights at the end of the week than the beginning of the week.
All right. Now time to the story that had us all texting offline yesterday. Antonio Brown, the situation in Oakland has gone from bad to worse to perhaps implacable. On Wednesday, Brown reportedly got into a verbal altercation with general manager Mike Mayock threatening to punch him. This after the star receiver took to Instagram to complain about being fined for missed practices. Well, now the Raiders are reportedly planning on suspending AB, perhaps even trying to void his $30 million guaranteed contract. Here's general manager Mike Mayock.
Antonio Brown's not in the building today. He won't be practicing. I don't have any more information for you right now. And when I have some and it becomes appropriate, you guys all get it, I promise you. But that's it for today.
I'm not going to get into any of that stuff right now. We'll have an official announcement later, but I'll be happy to answer any other questions.
Did you see the incident yesterday after practice?
Like I said, I'm not going to get into all of it. Obviously, he wasn't here today, and when we have some information for you, we'll give it to you.
We haven't heard anything about a potential decision yet. I've been in touch with John Gruden, Mike Mayock from the Raiders, of course, Antonio, and we're trying to work through this. The goal is really to work everything out.
Where is Antonio?
He's still in Oakland.
Okay.
And, you know, speaking for my behalf, my objective is to get things worked out between Antonio and the Raiders so he can fulfill his contract and do what they brought him in to do. I don't think it's too late to salvage that relationship.
I don't know about that last part. Let's sink our teeth into this one. Nick, what'd you make of all this yesterday?
Man, Chris called me yesterday around 5 o'clock when all the news was filtering in and didn't even say hi, just was laughing And I knew exactly what he was calling about. This period in Antonio Brown's life, I don't know when this will happen, but at some point he's going to look back on with enormous regret, with I think it will cause him pain.
Can't guarantee that.
Well, I would be, it's going to cost him. I think this is going to cost him at least $25 million, if not the full $30 million.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that he's going to be reflective and treat the situation with some type of logic.
Okay.
Like, you're appropriating too much for this.
And maybe I am appropriating.
And you've been doing that, and I keep trying to tell you it's going to get worse, Nick. It's going
to
get worse,
Nick. And it has now gotten to the point to where, in the Antonio Brown Mad Libs come to life, after the saga of arrive to your first day at work in hot air balloon, can't practice because you freeze your feet in a cryogenic chamber, try to smuggle a hand-painted helmet onto the practice field.
Two grievances with the NFL.
Now we are to the point to where threatened to fight your boss and held back by the noted voice of reason, Vontaze Burfict. I didn't agree with what he did in Pittsburgh, but I understood there was an objective. Get out, get somewhere, they will pay me money. Give me guaranteed money. And he achieved that objective. He has now done everything to undercut what he achieved, which was $30 million guaranteed. The only way that money goes away, and by the way, the Raiders have paid him $0. By my math right now, he's in the hole about $54,000 to the Oakland Raiders because they paid him no signing bonus. It was $500,000 if he did the offseason training. He didn't. And they have not paid him any salary for the season, obviously. He's now, the only way that money goes away is if you are suspended for conduct detrimental. The Raiders warned him with that letter, and he responded to that by doing something that is the definition of conduct detrimental in front of coworkers, threatened to fight your boss.
Oh, it was in public.
And so now he is just at the mercy of the court. Now he is simply at the mercy of what does Oakland want to do? And you could, listen, Drew Rosenhaus is as good as anybody at even when his client does the indefensible defending it. He was not defending Antonio there. It was just like, hopefully we can work it out. Hopefully this can come to a resolution.
Well, he'd like to get paid too.
Of course. 3% of $30 million, that's about $900,000 that Drew Rosenhaus has on the line in this. So I think this ends terribly. You usually, I can't believe the divorce is going to happen before the honeymoon, but it appears that that's where this is headed.
Well, I just hope that you talked about he's at the mercy of the court. Well, the judge is John Gruden, and the whole football world should be watching because John Gruden has tried to put himself off as a disciplinarian. That's what he did in Tampa Bay. That's why he suspended Keyshawn Johnson. He made Keyshawn Johnson go home for less than what's going on in Oakland. So now you've come out of TV, and I still think you're a TV star. But now it's the moment of truth. You hired Mike Mayock. He came out of television. You made him the general manager. Now are you going to empower him to do his job? Everyone's got a right to be able to do their job, and Mike Mayock can't do his job unless Gruden gives him the power. After being threatened, assaulted by one of the players, Gruden's got to be able to do something to the player. Because Mike Mayock is not going to ever have any type of say around that locker room. Guys aren't going to respect him if Gruden does not back him up. I'll be surprised if Gruden backs him up. Gruden wants the player. Gruden wants the player on the field, and this is what they've invested in. I told you guys, one of the things about Gruden upset me. I know Amari Cooper. I've been knowing him since he was 16 years old. Impeccable character. Works hard. Man, wants to be a great player. Khalil Mack. Oh, my God. You will not hear anyone from high school, college, or in his days of dominating the NFL say anything negative about him, his character, his work ethic. But you allow these guys to come leave your locker room and you invested and gave $30 million and empowered AB to take over. That's the culture that you want. You get what you pay for. So I ain't surprised at all. It will get worse. And if they bring him back into the locker room, this is one of many things before ultimately it's going to end up in a divorce. It's just a matter of when we're going to get there.
So that's just it. At this point, don't go halfway. If you wrote that letter that AB already posted, if you're threatening at this point to have all this information and hold all this information and do something, because
But what is this something? Are you saying suspend him? Suspend him for four games or cut him?
I don't think releasing him. I think suspending him. And see, if I'm sure it won't make a difference, but at least you can say we tried everything. We issued a warning. We then went ahead and suspended him. Nothing changed, and now we're releasing him. Of course John Gruden wants the player on the field. He wants what they invested in. Three quarters of this is on the Raiders. They knew what they were buying when they bought
it. I did. No, no, no.
To go ahead and complain now that they don't like the merchandise when they knew it was spoiled merchandise?
Hold on. No, no, no. You can't. Three quarters of this, the majority of this is not on the Raiders. The majority of this is on.
Well, no. When you decide to bring that into your house,
and then
they controlled that. So whose fault is that?
It is their. Listen, they went into they bought the. I don't want to say bought the product. They traded for the player. I understand that. But even then, see, I know you were saying it was going to get worse.
The Pittsburgh Steelers and the Rooneys met with AB privately, and they agreed we can't move any further. Pittsburgh said, that's fine. That's fine. We're going to keep it. What we're going to do, we're going to shop you. We're going to trade you. But we're going to not say anything. What does AB does? He posts a photo, him and the owner, and starts talking about it. So from the beginning, Nick, like, this is all intel that's free to everyone.
Agreed. But when I just have to be fair with what I said when it happened and right now. When the Raiders traded for him, I knew there would be nonsense surrounding him, but I thought a third and a fifth or a player of that caliber, I think we all sat here and said he will be productive for them. He will be a pain, and he will be a headache and a distraction, but he will be productive. I don't think anyone thought it was on the board he was going to be cut before the first game of the season.
No, no one thought he was going to be cut. But Chris Carter has been saying, ever since they got AB, ever since he's been empowered to do wrong, they gave him the $30 million. This is just the beginning. He would be lucky to be in Las Vegas. Now, it's not fair to the team. It's not fair to Carr. But I have been consistent about this. No, no one expected him before the first game.
Right.
But I have been consistent.
100%.
That this is just the beginning.
And right now, if Oakland put out to the league, we will trade you Antonio Brown under his current contract for a conditional seventh-round pick, meaning you can have him for free, but you assume the contract. Does any team sign up for it? I think the answer is no. Now, if he gets cut, will he get brought in by a team for a different contract? Almost assuredly, yes. But I think Antonio has done enough to where if you could just take him from Oakland for with under $15 million this year, $15 million next year, I don't think any team
wants
that.
This is the thing, Nick. I disagree with you, man. This league is crazy, man. I have seen dudes. I'm talking about real crimes, bro. He hadn't committed any crimes. And teams have tried to sign them and or sign them, and they go on to play in the NFL after these events. So to think that AB, because he threatened the general manager, oh, he's getting ready to be out of football? Oh, no, absolutely not. This is one of the reasons why I was upset about Kaepernick. Man, you got all these really edgy guys playing, but because a guy protests, peacefully, he can't play. AB, if they cut him, he will be playing somewhere else.
Oh, I agree. I thought I said that. If they cut him, he'll be playing somewhere else. I don't think anyone would take on his contract along with him. I think if he gets cut and you get him for $3 million, the team will take a chance on him. But if the Raiders, before cutting him, said, we'll trade you for nothing.
This is 100% the Raiders' fault. All you got to do is go out there and do the research. And Mike Mayock, this kid was forced on him by John Gruden. 100%. On the Raiders, no one else. You can't expect a bad juvenile kid to come into your house and then all of a sudden he gonna have table manners? Absolutely not. You get what you deserve, and it's 100% the Raiders' fault.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future. Or visit www.pacificlife.com. On to the Patriots and the Steelers now. Two AFC Giants facing off on Sunday Night Football in Week 1. Both have questions. Steelers without Lev Bell and Antonio Brown. Patriots without, well, a real receiving core. According to Fox Bet, the Patriots are 6-point favorites. Interestingly, Steelers were the last team to beat the Pats back in Week 15 last season. See, what's the key to this game?
Well, number one for Pittsburgh is you have to try to figure out what type of game plan New England's going to have. Are they going to be the team that the last quarter of the season, that being Week 15 and through the playoffs in the Super Bowl, that they're going to be a run-oriented, dominant, two tight ends, maybe a fullback and a tight end in the game? Or do they decide, because Pittsburgh has question marks in their secondary, do they decide to air it out? This is one of those times that Belichick, he has a huge advantage. Tom Brady, the receivers, everyone's played in the preseason. I don't expect them to be as sluggish as what I saw last night, where we saw very few of the stars playing the preseason for the Bears and the Packers, and their offense performance, it suffered from that. So first you got to figure out Pittsburgh, what type of team is New England trying to be, and be ready for their changeup, because they'll go through this game just like any other game where they'll try to evolve. I would double team Josh Gordon. I would force them to throw the ball to other people. I know they don't have a tight end that's a threat, so I wouldn't be surprised if Pittsburgh, from the beginning, with this new attitude, this new chemistry, this new locker room they have, defensively, they come after Tom Brady.
And the Steelers are trying to do something they've never done with Big Ben, which is beat Tom Brady in that stadium. They're 0-5. Tom Brady has 18 touchdowns and no picks against Pittsburgh in New England. They have dominated them. You mentioned they did beat them last year, which was a surprise, especially given the way Pittsburgh was playing at the time. But that was in Pittsburgh. You mentioned Josh Gordon, and I think that is a very interesting part of this football game, because when we talk about the questions New England has at wide receiver, one of those questions is because you can't rely on Josh Gordon for a full season, because we haven't seen him play a full season in about a half decade. But he's going to be there Week 1. He's going to be there Week 1. Edelman's going to be there Week 1. And so how much do the Patriots lean on the receiving core as opposed to what they were at the end of last season, which was a dominant run team, when they're going to have a center who's never started a game in the NFL, when they're going to have a left tackle who's never started a game in the NFL, when they're going to have replacement-level tight ends because Gronk's gone and their other tight end is missing this week as well. In fact, I think their top two tight ends that they brought in are suspended for the very beginning of the season.
Kendricks is suspended, Ben Watson suspended.
Absolutely. And so there are real questions there. The question for the other question for the Steelers, I should mention, is can they are the Patriots markedly better at the one thing defensively they were really bad at last year, which is covering backs out of the backfield? If Todd Gurley were healthy, that's something I think that could have flipped the Super Bowl, would have been dump offs to the backfield to Gurley. Last, you've got Jalen Samuels. James Conner is shown to be at least an adequate pass catcher. Can the Steelers take advantage of that, or is it not something to take advantage of because that's something New England has fixed over the offseason or has addressed over the offseason? Those are the questions to ask, but it would be, to me, very surprising if New England at home with Pittsburgh, with this what I think is a limited receiving core, what they're used to, if New England does not take care of business and beat Pittsburgh to open the season.
Both teams lost their number one target. I mean, the Patriots lost Gronk, and obviously the Steelers lost Antonio Brown. Who overcomes their loss more?
Well, you have more confidence that Tom Brady and the Patriots, because they just know, they know how to play the game, and they're going to attack the defense. Tom Brady, he knows his stats against Pittsburgh. Against Pittsburgh, they throw the ball. Don't try to get into a physical contest. So with Tom Brady, to me, it's a huge advantage. And Josh Gordon, you can basically just do it week to week until you get to the Super Bowl and hope that he's in the lineup. We know a number of years ago, the Raiders, they lost one of their starters, decided to go to Mexico before the game. So with Josh, as long as he's in the lineup, you can be like, Tom Brady's going to go to him because he trusts him far more than Demarius, far more than any of those tight ends. Everyone on the field offensively except James White. So Brady, to me, makes that adjustment.
And this is a hell of a first test for this Steelers wide receiving core with no Antonio. Juju, it's his first real game, first season, certainly going into the season as a number one. He's only played a couple games in his career without Antonio, where he's the number one option. James Washington, after a somewhat disappointing rookie season, heard good things of him coming out of camp. This might be the best secondary in the NFL. I'm very curious to see how they deploy Stephon Gilmore. Do they do, Belichick used to say, okay, I'll have my number one corner guard the other team second best receiver and double team the team's best receiver. Does he deploy that? Like, if the Steelers wide receiving core, this will be their toughest matchup, I think, all season long. How do they respond to it? That'll be something that could determine the game as well. But I like that.
Welcome back to First Things First. Chris Bosh played 13 NBA seasons, was an all-star in 11 of them, also won two titles in 2012 and 2013 with the Miami Heat. But just as impressive as all of that, he's here with us early this morning chatting. Thank you so much for being with us, sir. Chris, love having you here.
Absolutely.
All right, how's retirement going? You just told us about this amazing vacation you just came off of. How are things going?
It's going good. I was just saying summers used to be a lot, you know, more fun because I got to do all the crazy stuff and be a kid. I have five children.
Oh, yeah, you're so, no longer the kid.
Yeah, I'm no longer the kid, and now school started back, so I'm very happy.
Yeah, it's your school year, their school year is your summer now.
Absolutely.
So, all right, so during the summer, while you were wrangling your kids, it was one of the craziest summers, really the craziest summer since the summer you, LeBron, and Wade came together. But that was really one instance. This was the whole league changed in the span of about 96 hours. What was your opinion of it? What was your reaction to it, watching it from afar?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a slippery slope sometimes because a lot of fans get upset. A lot of fans get happy, and a lot of fans get upset at the same time. But I liked the league kind of rebalancing a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that was really exciting. I mean, the Warriors had their run, and they're probably still going to be successful after Klay comes back. But just reshuffling is nothing. It's nothing wrong with that. And I liked how it reshuffled a little bit. The East lost more All-Stars, as usual. But, you know, I think it's still in a very good, you know, interesting place, and it'll be very competitive next year.
It should be very competitive. One of your good friends, LeBron James, and the Lakers, a lot of hype about them. They've already suffered a significant injuries, already losing Boogie for the season. What would your expectations be with, because, you know, it's difficult to play with LeBron. You got to make a lot of adjustments. They added Dwight Howard. What would your expectations of the Lakers and with this re-energized Dwight Howard?
Well, I think it's a championship or bust situation. I think everybody knows
okay.
that. If you want to be a part of the Lakers, it's all about championships. You know, you go and play in the Staples Center or go to their practice facility, you're going to see all the greats up there and all those banners looking down on you. And so that's what it's about. And they have a very strong team. I think on paper they have the strongest team. Mm-hmm. And of course they have to put it together, but you know, it's not difficult playing with LeBron. It's just you have to you know, you have to change your game. You just like,
but you're only playing 82 games. It's yeah. not only playing with LeBron, it's the rest of that stuff.
Absolutely. It's a team sport, obviously, right? And you know, it's a lot of dynamics that you have to get used to playing with them, but at the same time it's better than not playing with them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's a great player. So you want to play with great players. You want to have great teammates and be in those kind of situations.
He's a great player. Is he the greatest player in the league right now? Is LeBron still the best player in the league?
I mean, well, that's always such a relative argument. Yes, but then you have to give it to Kawhi right now because he was on, you know, the best team, was the finals MVP.
Sure.
So I would give respect to Kawhi, but at the same time, You know, Bron coming off of a nice stretch of off time for the first time in years, I think he's going to be rejuvenated, probably get a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And attack this season like he's supposed to.
This is now, we had the era of big threes. We even briefly in Golden State appeared to have a big four. Mm-hmm. And now it seems to be back to duos. The injured guys, let's make them healthy for a moment. So you have KD, Kyrie, Steph, Clay, Russ, Harden, Kawhi, Paul George, LeBron, Anthony Davis. Is there one of those five that stands out to you as the best duo right now in the league?
I think Kyrie and
KD.
KD, that's an interesting dynamic because KD can play 1 through 5, guard 1 through 5. I think they have a very interesting dynamic that they can kind of exploit when they get healthy. Paul, PG and Kawhi, I mean, that's a lot of arms.
A lot of length
on that front, in the front court a little bit, and I think they'll be able to kind of really exploit that. They should have a very good defensive team this year. But I mean, you know, I don't know who's going to be the best. I'm not going to lie to you, man. I mean, I'm the type of person that you just have to play the game. It's a lot of hype and everybody looks good and that's great. You want eyeballs on you, but then when it's time to toss the ball up.
But that's what you said you love about the league right now, that you don't know who the best is because there's parity for the first time in a long time because of all the reshuffling.
Absolutely.
And that's what you said you're most looking forward to. I'm also curious, which move, though, surprised you the most? I know you said you really like all the different moves. Were you surprised that Kawhi went to the Clippers? Were you surprised KD ended up coming here to Brooklyn? What to you said, whoa, I didn't expect that?
Kawhi and KD. I didn't know where...
You thought they'd pair up, you didn't know where.
Well, I didn't know. You know, I think everybody kind of speculated Kawhi was thinking of one of the L.A. teams. I think that was always heavy in the speculation. Right. But at the same time, the way, you know, Paul going there and then Kawhi going there, it changed the dynamic tremendously in the West.
Right.
You know, Oklahoma City, they're back in a rebuilding situation a little bit. And Paul gets to the Clippers and now they have a championship caliber team right off the bat. I think that was the moves that surprised me the most. And then Russ going to Houston, them being able to pull off
that trade. Works, those two guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when people say, oh, man, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Look, two MVPs, I'm going to take it and we'll figure it out later.
Yeah, but you're one of those kind of guys, though, that I can play with anyone. You can adapt. You can play in the post. You saw with LeBron, man, you went out on the court. Man, developed that three-pointer, that nice one from the corner. I want to go back to Kawhi's situation because very few people have the experience of knowing about the people up north in Canada and the type of hospitality. Imagine how tough, because I talk to people. I know Kawhi, know his people. Take us through how tough it was for him to win that championship the way he wanted and leave there, even though he was going back home because of the pull of Canada on him now that they were champions.
Well, I mean, I couldn't imagine winning a championship in Toronto because how they treat me and we didn't win anything.
Right.
You know, we didn't win nothing and they still very
It would have been impossible for you to leave.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, the ownership there, the management, Larry Tannenbaum's a great owner of the team. He's always visible. You can always talk to him. You can knock on his door at any time. They've always kind of had that open door policy. So that trickling down and then Masai being the GM, they built a great culture there. And for them to capitalize and win a championship was amazing. But yeah, to leave is not easy at all because, I mean, I know you saw the parade.
Yes.
I mean, just the people and the love that that place gives out. I mean, even if you make a business decision later to do whatever you want to do, they're going to make it hard on you. But, you know, I always tell people, you know, Toronto was a great start for me. You know, some of the best fans in the world.
2003 draft class, the greatest top five of a draft class in NBA history, the number two pick notwithstanding. That LeBron is obviously still playing at a super high level. You were playing at a very high level, an all-star level, until blood clots obviously derailed what you were doing. D-Wade just finally stepped aside after playing well for Miami last year and having some moments late in the season. Melo hasn't stepped aside. He's being pushed aside to a degree. You know, Melo, you played in the league almost the entirety of his career. Why do you think he's not in the league, and do you think he could help a good team?
Yes, he could help a good team. He's a pretty good basketball player. I don't know. I can't understand why he doesn't have a job. Maybe people are still trying to figure out what they want to do with their teams, what kind of, if any, veteran presence, if they want a veteran presence, those slots they need to fill, and if he can fill them. You know, I think it's crazy that he's not playing. I mean, I've been knowing Melo since we were both 17 years old, and, you know, just kind of seeing those things starting to happen, it always does, right? But I think he should be playing. I mean, he's good enough. He's in shape. He can shoot it. I don't know if they watch much basketball, but he can play, you know, and I think he can really, really help a team if, you know, they bring him in.
You've been you've been retired. You've had a second to kind of look back and think about your games and your days. Who's the best player you ever played against?
Tim Duncan.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because he was my hero growing up, and then I had to play in the finals against him twice. You know, being in San Antonio, I'm from Dallas.
Yep.
Being able to see Tim, you know, play right up close and how great he was, and that was kind of the evolution of the four man, you know, so.
Real quick on that, you mentioned playing in the finals against him twice. Ray Allen, I think he's told us, has a framed picture, not shockingly, of one of the biggest shots in NBA history in his house. Mm-hmm. You've got a couple of really nice houses. Do you have anywhere in there a framed picture of the rebound? Maybe the biggest rebound in NBA history?
I don't.
How does that not happen?
I put up all my memorabilia in storage, actually.
But do you, okay, so you have it in storage, but yeah. Do you have anything commemorating that moment? The rebound that led to the Ray Allen shot?
I need
the forgotten
to.
Rebound.
I should get it, man. I don't. I'm thinking like, yeah, I don't. You know, I need some new posters, too, so.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah, I need to.
Every time I see you on TV, it's not lost on me what you went through. But I think about you as a person. You've played at a high level, high school, amazing player. Short college career, amazing player. High draft pick by the Raptors. What do you think about when you watch NBA games now?
It's fast, really fast. You know, the game has changed. It's evolved quite a bit. I think the three ball was really, really prevalent in the last 2 years. I think that'll tone down just a little bit, but. Mm-hmm. You know, just the speed of the game, the skills of the player. Now it's encouraged for big men to shoot, for big men to handle the ball. Before, you know, you get the coach standing up on the sideline.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that's how it always happened.
Right.
But, you know, now, I mean, it's been waiting for a long time for the game to evolve like that. Now it's accepted. And I like seeing the young guys play. I mean, going out there, playing as fast as they do, and then it being so competitive, especially next year. I love NBA basketball.
You mentioned you're from Texas. You were a Cowboys fan growing up, correct?
Yes.
Still a Cowboys fan.
Still a Cowboys fan, yeah.
All right, Zeke's in the fold. Yeah. Went to the playoffs last year, won a game. What do you think about your Cowboys this year?
I mean, hey, man, feel good. Feel good. You know, it's funny. Everybody, that's always kind of like a thing. You know, it's always a subject of conversation in the fall. Like, man, what? You know, who team do you like?
Yeah.
Cowboys fan.
Well, because people assume you get a different reaction. It's Cowboys fan. Where are you from? Oh, I'm from Maryland. People, you know what I mean? People think
right.
you.
I'm from
but
Dallas.
You're from yes. Dallas, so you got it authentically. Now you're a little. You're around my age, so you remember the glory days, but you weren't. You were like 9, 10, 11 years old during the glory days. So yeah, this is potentially the best era of Cowboys football of your adult life that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. How much you like Dak? How much you like their team?
I mean, they're a great team. I've had a chance to meet some of the guys, and I went to training camp a couple years back. I mean, it's a great core of guys. Jason Witten coming back this year, given that veteran presence in the locker room, I think that's really important. But, I mean, that's what it comes down to. We all know that they're going to get covered. It's going to be a big deal. You know, Zeke, he has his contract now. Now it's time to perform. Dak, I think he knew his situation coming in. Like, all right, cool, we've got these contracts. I'm going to come in and be, you know, the number one in quarterback and do my job. And if he does his job, you know, he will get rewarded. But even after that, you know what it is. You have to compete for a Super Bowl. And that's just, you know, that's the bottom line.
Standard in Dallas.
Yeah.
All right, did you catch the video of Pat Riley and Dwayne Wade doing a little Aladdin-themed partying on the boat?
I didn't. I heard about it.
Oh, well, why don't we show you, and then you can pretty much let us
this
know
is unbelievable.
If you
this
would
is
ever
your,
have been a part of
oh,
this.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, boy.
You didn't know that was Pat.
I didn't know that was Pat. That's Pat?
Yeah.
I did not know that was,
there was
Pat.
There's a little, like, Greg Popovich.
I thought that was another dude, man. I didn't know that was Pat.
Right.
What?
I didn't think it was
Whose
him either.
Whose beard is that?
That's his beard.
That is not what he bought it. His beard.
They're doing Pat Riley's beard like Nick Wright's hair.
Oh my God! I saw Chris a couple years ago when he walked in studio. Right. He says to me, "He's like, man, when I saw you 2 years ago, weren't you bald?" I'm like, "Man, I shaved my head. You can grow hair, boy."
They probably should have worked on that move a little bit. I like the two step, but you know they probably should have got a.
Yeah, I think Gabrielle Union maybe teach D Wade a few more dance moves.
I actually posted that video. I didn't know that was Pat.
Really?
Chris, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.